Good morning and welcome to A Public Affair. I'm your host, Tish Buford. In studio this morning, we have two very special guests, just great people in general, and I think you're going to be just delighted with them. So I want to introduce Mr. Xander Oaklar and his partner, Chris Sanchez, and we're going to be talking to them about the LGBTQA+ anti-discrimination laws that are going on in the country. So we're going to be discussing that with them, as well as what it's like to not only be a gay couple, but also a gay interracial couple, and how they are navigating through all of this anti-discriminatory behavior, and also what they're working on in the community and the plans they have for Aurora in 2022 coming up. So let's welcome Mr. Xander Oaklar and Chris Sanchez. Welcome, gentlemen. Good morning.
Hello. Thank you so much for having us.
Good morning. Thanks for having us.
Oh, it is a delight and an honor to have you guys. Now, as I said in my introduction, I have you guys with us today to talk to our audience about just the heightened insanity of anti-discrimination and anti-LGBTQA+ legislation going on throughout this country. And why are we here? And how did we get here over the last 5 years? Most people have a common answer for that. But from your purview as a gay couple, and more specifically as a gay interracial couple, how has this affected your lives?
Well, I think that, you know, all these laws and legislation has had a lot of impact on a local level as well as a national level. We see it affecting people in our neighborhood. You know, they're hearing these lies that are perpetuated online and through the different news services. And they, you know, they don't have a queer person in their life. And so it's much easier to believe what they're told by these figures that are supposed to be arbiters of truth. And they come back and they apply that to their life. And it affects LGBT people here in Colorado, in Aurora, and across the country. But, you know, ways that it's specifically affected our lives is just, you know, as we're walking down the street, you know, we just feel that energy sometimes, you know, and we go different places and sometimes we feel a lot of affection towards us. They see a queer couple out in nature and they're so excited to see us. And then sometimes we get those stares, you know, especially when we're going up into the mountains or, you know, into rural communities. And so I'm so excited that we get to, you know, have this time to talk with you about it.
It is my pleasure and I'm honored to have both of you. And Chris, how do you see this? How has it affected you and your partnership with Xander?
Yeah, I think a big part of our relationship has been just growing for me as well. I necessarily wasn't as involved in the community and understanding the political aspect of being a queer folk in the community. And Xander has really exposed me to that and given me opportunities to understand it, but also to put it into practice and really expand my reach and outreach to the community. I'm definitely wanting to be more involved with it now, and it's definitely been an impact on my relationship with him and improved our relationship together. But even the day-to-day of just kind of being a couple in a purple state does come with its pros and cons. So there definitely have been positive experiences with folks we haven't met before, but also some that weren't the most comfortable.
Absolutely. And being an interracial couple, on top of being a gay couple, does that also play a role in some of the uncomfortable situations you've had to deal with and some of the prejudice?
Yeah, absolutely. I'd say, like Xander was saying, in the more rural areas, when we're doing road trips down to different parts of the U.S. and we stop by and a smaller community that may not be as exposed to queer folks, it definitely feels a bit like you seem like you're disgusting to them or just not their cup of tea, if you must. So it definitely at times you could it hurts and it makes you feel and think through you as a person and their actions as a person. But moving on from it and just educating folks on what it means to be queer in the community is what we have to continue to do.
Absolutely. And I do think that where we struggle in general, just with gender bias and gender ignorance, taking away you know, sexual orientation in the midst of all that is just not understanding each other and understanding why I'm unique from someone else or why you are unique from someone else. People, I hate to say this, but we tend to fall into lemmings territory when it comes to knowledge, because it's easier for people to tell you what to think than for you to figure out how to think. And that is what people who prey on those folks who don't know any better or who do not want to expand their horizons or their thought process about a race, culture, gender, or individuals, they prey on that because it's the fastest way to alienate people with their thinking, but then they double down on it and have them just, you know, calcify that way of thinking, and then it's so hardened in them, it is next to impossible to get them to move on that position with a different view. Would you agree, Xander?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you really see it across the spectrum here in the metro area. You see some religious people that are using their beliefs to continue hate in the community, and you see people that are open and affirming. I went to prom with a queer person at my public high school, but they attended a private high school, a Catholic high school. And so we went out there and we protested that school, and we had nuns and priests come out there and protest with us. So there's a lot of ways to interpret, you know, things, and it's great to see that there's people that are taking differing views on these stances and really supporting the LGBT community.
That is a great story. That I wish I could have been witness to that. That is fantastic. Now, how long ago was this?
So that was probably 2010. My grandma came out. It was her first ever protest. She was so proud, had a sign, and was in there in her wheelchair. My mom and my brother were there as well. You know, I'm just so lucky to have such a supportive family that really shows up when I need them.
And you said right there, Xander, that you have to have support. And there are a lot of men and women that do not have that support. Mm-hmm. And Chris, would you say that your family has been supportive of your life choices?
It's actually mixed for my experience. My parents grew up very religious, and I grew up religious as well. My mom was a pastor's kid, so she had it instilled in her since she was young, and they still do practice, which is great for them. I'm happy that they have that faith, have that spirituality. But it really disconnected for me going through it all and hearing the negative words that they had for what I was going through and understanding in myself, that it made it challenging to find a connection with the spirituality that they have. One side of my family has been incredibly supportive and really open to Xander and us as a couple and seeing it come to life, but the other side has been a bit more distant, and I don't really interact with them ever or at all. So it definitely is mixed, but I do focus more on the side that is supportive and loving, and that's what keeps me going and what, yeah, keeps me happy here.
So, Chris, why don't you tell me about the support from your immediate family and then the lack of support that you're getting from your extended family and how that's affected you?
Yeah, I think earlier in my adulthood or childhood, it definitely affected me a lot more. I took it very personally and felt that it was preventing me from being my full self because I didn't have that support. Then over time, I think that level of maturity just grew in me, and I understood that I don't need it. I can find my support elsewhere and find that love in folks that may not be blood related. And that just was really something I stuck with and helped me open up to finding a relationship that I could commit to and someone I really want to continue with in the relationship. And yeah, I think a big part of working and being a part of a religious household is taking opportunities to educate them. I mean, my parents weren't necessarily open arms when I first came out in high school, but over time we had time to educate them and learn a lot more about what it means to be gay and Latinx even. So it definitely took time, but with the education and love and support, it it can be learned.
Right. And like with anything, you know, parents, they inherently, you know, project their hopes and dreams on their children. And, you know, just like sometimes parents disappoint their children, sometimes children disappoint their parents. And I know disappoint is a strong word, but that's generally the feeling. And it's unfair, but you're connected to them. You are a reflection of them. And it's hard to separate the two. Even when you become a grown man or a grown woman, it's like, well, you're still a reflection of me on some level. And so they don't want to tell you, I'm uncomfortable with this, I'm ashamed of this, I don't know how to tell you that this is not what I want you to be. And it's hard for parents, loved ones, and friends, and in some cases, coworkers, people who are around you every day, to be politically correct about that. And Xander, have you experienced that in the workplace?
Yeah, I have. I've definitely had bosses who have tried to push me in a certain path. But what I've kind of realized is that my being LGBTQ has just been a benefit in my career. You know, yeah, it makes some people uncomfortable, but at the same time, it has kind of like allowed me to make some connections with people that I don't think I would have if I was in a kind of heteronormative relationship. Every time you go into a new job, you kind of have to come out all over again. And I think a lot of queer people experience that. And it's like, am I safe to be queer in this space? You know? And so, you know, I have now come to a point where I am very explicit about being queer in a job, you know, application and in my interviews, because, you know, I don't want to get to that point where my boss is asking me if I've gone on any dates with women lately or things like that, you know, especially like men, straight men within a workplace often will, you know, have this man-on-man conversation and, you know, they immediately include you in this and it just becomes very uncomfortable, you know, hearing them talk about women in a way that, you know, I don't want to hear about. But at the same time, there's been men, straight men in my workplaces that have been extremely accepting and who have really, you know, changed my mind about the world in general. And so, you know, I've kind of had both sides of that.
And that's great that you've seen both sides. I just wish it was more supportive. But it's unrealistic to think that that's going to happen because the world consists of so many different types of people, different walks of life, and different mindsets. And Chris, how's your experience been in the workplace?
Yeah, so thankfully, I have a really supportive workplace, especially more recently after kind of COVID and everything over the past 2-3 years. A lot of larger companies are making that move to highlight that they're more inclusive and kind of take that step there. And I've seen it. Don't get me wrong. It's definitely, they've had a lot of educational resources and things to make our community feel welcomed in their company. So yeah, I've been really thankful to work where I am.
That's great to hear. Now, on the other side of our break here, I want to get into some of the legislation that has been pushed and accelerated in this country. And we were talking about this off air, that there's about 240 legislative bills that target LGBTQA, transgender men and women in this country. And I want to discuss that and talk about what the messaging is behind it, because it's not just, you know, anti-discriminatory, but I do feel that there is a large degree of hate mongering there. And I want to touch on that and get into some of this legislation that you guys want to share with our audience. So we'll be right back with the wonderful Xander Oaklar and Chris Xander on KGNU Public Radio. I am your host, Tish Buford. You're listening to Public Affair. And we're going to go ahead and finish our conversation and start in on this topic here. So there are a ton of bills being passed all over this country, unfortunately, or those that are waiting in the weeds to pass through state and local jurisdictions throughout the country. What are some of the bills that you find most disturbing? Do you have an example of a couple of those?
Yeah, well, you know, we're seeing a ton of these bills come. Like you were saying, there's 240 bills that were introduced this year. And 2018, we had the most ever, and that was 79 bills. Every single year since then, we've beaten that number, which is not something we should be proud of. We continue to introduce more and more anti-LGBT hate legislation. But right now, we're seeing a lot of stuff about, you know, people having their true identity changed on their government IDs and licenses, preventing people from changing their sex on these documents, as well as listing themselves as non-binary. We've been seeing a lot of especially trans women being prevented from playing on female sports teams. We've been seeing a lot of bills about people not allowing, you know, queerness to be discussed in school, preventing trans and LGBT people from receiving healthcare benefits. And so those are some of the things that are just really distressing. And it seems right now they're particularly targeting trans people. And I think that one of the reasons they're pivoting towards that is because it's part of the LGBT community that they know least about. It's easiest to scapegoat and target people that you don't have that connection with. And so I think it's really important to continue to educate people about the trans community and really uplift that community and give them more visibility.
Absolutely. And I wanted to add something before we bring Chris in on this. I feel that the LGBTQ population is a very strong democratic voting population. So I do feel that while the messaging is destructive and nihilistic, I do feel that it's strongly political, clearly, because I do think they're trying to isolate a certain voting base while shaming that group of particular population of men and women. So I think they're trying to kill the voting power, but also kill the identity. What do you think, Chris?
Yeah, I think you brought up a lot of good points in terms of like how they're even writing these bills, the way that the words they're using, it's very demoralizing and disrespectful, to be honest, to the trans community and the queer community overall. A lot of these bills that we're also seeing are kind of trends that are happening, or what they call copycat bills, where one state sees it happening and another predominantly Republican state or county will bring it up in their end and really use the same verbiage. So it's spreading throughout the U.S. and mostly these more rural counties and communities and states that are historically voting Republican. But either way, I think the biggest kind of copycats that we're seeing are the ones focused on the sports teams and especially the trans healthcare resources, where medical professionals could kind of turn away someone who is wanting to get gender affirming surgery or resources.
Right. And it's so sad, but it feels like if one, you know, governing body can get away with passing local or state legislation, just like you said, another body's going to do it if they can get away with it. And, you know, the theory is that, all right, even if we get caught up in lawsuits with these, you know, they could keep appealing to the Supreme Court and ultimately get their way collectively. And I believe that's the motivation behind this as well, is to have it get to the Supreme Court and eventually have them provide a blanket mandate across the board. Would you guys agree with that, Xander?
Yeah, I do think that they're trying to just create this legislation across the board. I think also what we're seeing is, even though they're not even getting the full support of the Republican Party and the state in general, they're trying to pass these things, knowing that even if they don't get passed, it's something that they can laud when they're on their reelection campaign, right? We're seeing that people are trying to push this legislation. You know, we saw legislation in Oklahoma, and the legislation only had 27% support of the Republican Party. But they're still pushing it because those 27% are the loudest and are going to really help them get reelected. And so even though these politicians know that what they're doing is not what the people they're representing want, they're doing it anyways because they know that they can use it as a tool to get reelected.
Absolutely. And some of them may not even believe this, but they still want to peddle this as political ammunition. And let's be clear about this. This is not a Republican or Democratic issue. Mm-hmm. This is a dehumanization issue. So I want to make sure that we're very clear that we're not piling on one party. Mm-hmm. This is just a dehumanization issue across the board. Yeah. And whether Democrats, Republicans, independents, whoever your political affiliation is, and even if you don't vote, you're not affiliated with a political position or party, this is a human issue. And people have been doing this for hundreds of years. Mm-hmm. Race baiting, culture wars, fear mongering. If it's not sex, then it's gender. If it's not gender, then it's sex. If it's not either one of those, then it's race. If it's not that, it's economics, social class. Everything has a battle, and everything has an arbiter of that battle. And this is the latest subject in a long line of things that have been used to continue to divide this country. And Chris, would you say the messaging has gotten more, I hate to use this word, but more vile?
I'd say it's definitely changed, the messaging.
Yeah.
The way that it's affecting and specifically targeting the youth and trans youth specifically is scary. I mean, imagine being someone who is afraid of coming out and being in high school or elementary school, and now you don't even have your teachers or someone in your classroom to be able to discuss this with, let alone your family may or may not be religious or somewhat affiliated with these bills that are being passed. And it's hurtful and very, very much attacking. And I think the big thing, or a point that you brought up here too, is how there's not really any explicit and full non-discriminatory protections within all of the states within the U.S. Yes, we have like the more recent laws banning from protections discrimination against race, gender, sex, and so on. But there are some states and majority of states that don't have something explicitly stating this. And I think that's where we need to start sometimes, starting from the roots and kind of working the way up to build for more protection for these youth and for trans kids specifically.
Oh, I agree with that. And also, too, to take this a step further, there are more provisions and legal protections for trans, LGBTQA, non-binary men and women in other provinces and countries. Mm-hmm. For instance, Canada, they have a lot of provisions for this. We are just behind. Mm-hmm. United States is behind in general.
Yes.
And we need to catch up. But the problem is that we're still stuck in, and this is just my opinion, we're still stuck in the 400-year documentary that we haven't acknowledged yet. So if we haven't acknowledged hundreds of years of debauchery and bad behavior, you know, we're not going to discuss, you know, sexual preferences. Mm-hmm. So we're still behind. Equally as important, because as of the creation of man goes, men and women had orientations and they lived those lives. And that just didn't start in 2022. Or 2002 or 2001 or 1992. This has been a part of the human race since the creation of man. But man, in its mortality and its intellectual fervor of wanting to splinter this off and make this a non-primary issue, they're just deferring the inevitable evolution of what's already taken place in front of them. And with that said, you guys are the epitome of class, intelligence, positivity. And this is something I want to see from all men and women who are together, whether you're single, married, gay, straight, binary, non-binary. I want to see happiness and I want to see inclusion in this world. And you guys are a wonderful example of that. And before we get out of here today, real quickly, I want to give you guys a chance to discuss some of the activities that are going on in Aurora and in the metro area coming up this summer and this fall. So, yeah. Xander, you want to handle that for us?
Yeah, well, I'm really excited. I don't know if we've mentioned it yet, but I'm the director of Aurora Pride. It's the Pride Festival for the city of Aurora. It's been going on for 6 years now, and it grows every year. it's such a cool event because not only is it bringing the most diverse city in our state together, but also it's beachfront. We have it at the Aurora Reservoir every year, so you can sit on the beach, watch your drag queens perform, drink your drink. You know, we have family-friendly stuff in the morning, and we have just a lot of great entertainers that are truly represent our city of Aurora. We try to have food trucks represent our city. It's just a truly amazing event. It's going to be happening on August 6th from 12 until 7 p.m. Tickets are going to start going on sale for parking passes starting here in June. But we also have a couple other events that we're doing this year. We're doing a drive-in drag show at the Town Center at Aurora on June 11th. And then we're working on a project in September with Dry Dock to do a pop-up queer bar. Aurora doesn't really have many queer spaces, not like some of our neighbors. So what we're trying to do is create them. We're trying to create safe and affirming places where LGBT people can get tested, get vaccinated, get resources, but also just being around other queer people. You know, we kind of have to create our own safe spaces and create our own love. And we hope to do that through these event series. And if you want to continue to learn more, follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and you can go to our website, aurorapride.com.
That sounds fantastic. And Chris, is there any other events or projects that you want to add that you're working on?
So I'm mostly working, obviously, my full-time job, but I also do have a small side gig where I create different pieces. I do different jewelry pieces, as well as recently got into sewing and knitting. So I'll be going to a few different pop-up shops throughout the community and highlighting my work there. And I'll definitely be at the events organized by Xander and Aurora Pride. I'll be volunteering there and excited to see other folks there too.
Well, that's wonderful. Xander and Chris, it's been an honor and a privilege to have you on the show this morning. And you guys keep doing great work and keep fighting the good fight. You guys are two very special and very, very lovely human beings. So it's been an honor to have you both.
Thank you so much,
thank
Tish.
You for having
it was
us.
Great being here.
And thank you all for listening to Public Affair. I've been your host, Tish Buford. Have a good day.